This is Scan, and I'm Hal Dragsa. Dr. Paul Pearsall is a medical researcher who's been looking for the intangible factors in good health.
When I was a little boy, I had all my grandparents alive, thank God. They were always around the house. And I was wondering why it was that these grandparents were so vibrant and alive. As I look back at it as an adult, certainly when I was a little boy, I never thought twice about that. That was just grandpa and grandma. But I wondered way back then, what was the vibrance? What did they bring to their life that made them so vibrant? Why did they live so long? My grandparents all lived into their late 90s and into the almost 100. One was 103. So personally, I thought, gee, I seem to be like grandpa, be like grandma. What is that component? And as I looked at it then as a researcher and as a person, it seemed to be three things. First of all, it was a general joy for living. Now that joy, though, is very specific. It was a joy that was celebrated every day. It wasn't a joy that, well, maybe we'll be joyful at Christmas and maybe we'll be joyful after we take a vacation. But it was really that every day was just a nice day. Second component was a sense of purpose. There was always the idea that we were going somewhere. We were going to do something. And I don't mean just, again, take a vacation or make a workbench, but that there was a reason we were on this earth. And even the jokes in the family would be, well, you were here to do this, and we know you were put here for a reason. Even though we'd say it with a smile on their face, that lesson got taught very early on, that there was a reason. Thirdly was the pace. I can remember a much easier time. I can remember when we didn't run so fast. I often suggest that we run so fast because we're lost, as if we're in a forest trying to find the way out. And the pacing was just different. Dinner was easy. We said grace before dinner. And not that people don't do that nowadays, but we said grace slowly. I can still remember my grandfather's steely gray eyes staring up at me when in the middle of grace I had snuck my hand across and tried to grab that roll. And he didn't yell, but grace stopped. And I felt my hand turn to ice. And I pulled it back and then attempted immediately to look reverent. And he said, perhaps, Paul, you would like to say grace. I can remember the panic and the torturous stammering around as I attempted to say this. And he said, you don't have to say any certain words. Just say thanks. And I did. That's sort of the thing that got me started in this idea, and as I looked at it retrospectively. So when I came out of school, I set up a clinic called the Problems of Daily Living Clinic. And that clinic was aimed at solving problems before they became major. Transitional life problems with marriage, with career, and with illness and terminal illness.
You're listening to Scan. Dr. Paul Pearsall, a medical researcher, believes that selfishness leads to illness.
Our approach to medicine today is what I sometimes call the speed approach. That is, we must label it. I once referred to it as the Rumpelstiltskin complex. Remember having to come up with the name. So that we have to give a name so that this person's type A, this person's type B, this person's type C. There is absolutely no evidence in the scientific literature to indicate that people are types. Now, having said that, our research indicated over 17 years that people do, from time to time and from moment to moment in their life, run very hot and run very cold. When you're running very hot, it's not your behaviors. It's not just talking fast. It's not just working hard. It's what's going on inside again. It's are you, and here's a little test, are you hostile, impatient, competitive inside? What is the reason that I write? Do I write my books because I'm going to be the best writer in the world and I'm going to make the most money and, boy, I'll teach everybody else how to write, the sick motives? Or do I write these books because somebody, just somebody, might read this book and be helped just that little bit? If I do that, then I don't run so hot, hostile, impatient, competitive. I run more warm. The number one predictor of heart disease today is not nutrition and is not hypertension. It's not high cholesterol. It is selfishness. Not because Paul Pearsall says so, but because the research shows clearly that when you are selfish, you disconnect. You pull away from the world, from all of us. We are, as physics teaches us, all one. And when you run too hot, you tend to run separate, isolate, pull away. When you run too cold, you become, another little test, defeated, inadequate, passive. Nothing will work. I'm sick, I won't get any better. Do anything you want to me, doctor. We call this the sweetheart patient. Anything you'd like, doctor. And we give up our responsibility for our own healing. When you run cold at those times, you're selfish in a very unusual way. You're selfish because you think nobody feels as sad as you are. No one can help you. It's all you against the world. There's no use turning anywhere else for help. That's a selfishness of withdrawal rather than achievement. So instead of looking at people as you're an A or a B or a C, we looked at those times in life that we all have when we run hot, when we run cold. When you tend to run hot, you may be more prone to heart disease and other such diseases of cardiovascular illness. When you run too cold, you may be prone to what I call cell disease, not cancer. I think that's a bad term. Cells may overgrow. Other things may go wrong. However, an important caveat, no one causes their own illness. It is totally incorrect for someone who's hearing my voice, who is seriously ill, to say, I must have done something wrong. I didn't believe enough. I am spiritually in poverty. I did something wrong. That's not true. On the other side of that coin, however, is that there is a miraculous healing capacity that we can mobilize if we don't run so hot and selfish and so cold and so surrendering. Unfortunately, as a professional writer and a doctor, I am highly rewarded for running hot. People compliment you. See, when I'm introduced to a medical audience, very seldom will they say, here is a very good father, a very good husband who's been married 23 years, a very good community member. What they'll say is, here's a man who's published 50 articles. Here's a man who's published 50 books. Here's a man who can run and think and talk and do everything at the same time and milk every minute of the day. Here's a man who has what I call hurry illness, and we're proud of him for it. So I have fallen victim to it. I believe psychology has become the study of the id by the odd. We are giving more weird recommendations, such as this one. Set priorities. I didn't set priorities. I made choices. And I recommend that we must make a choice. You have to ask this question, what is my life for? When I sat down at that time when I was writing books, writing articles, lecturing, I asked myself, what's it for? Why am I here? If you take the time to do that, then you can start to interfere with that pattern of running too hot. Because usually the answer you will come up with is a very similar in all the people we've talked to. Usually it has to do with loving. Usually it has to do with believing. Usually it has to do with connecting with other people. Usually it has to do with faith. And everybody is waiting for what I call the da-da phenomenon. It goes this way, the major chord at the end of the symphony. Once I paint the ceiling, the kids are out of college, I cut the grass, then da-da, and it never, never comes. So I suggest that if you're going to stop running hot, you have to make some major choices of how you are going to allot the one gift we were really given, which is our time. Now, if you're running cold, how do you do that? I found that those times when I get defeated, inadequate and passive, I needed to ask the same question. What is my life for? But go one more step. And who can help me? Now, some people will say to me, there's nobody. I'm widowed. I'm a widower. There's no one around. It is just not true. You don't always have to look outside to connect. Sometimes you have to look inside to connect. And that can be done by prayer. It can be done by meditation. It can be done by contemplation. I had one patient the other day talk to me and said, I pray all the time. I said, well, would you tell me one of your prayers? After he told me his prayer, here's the way it went. Dear God, please give me health, happiness, wealth, security. Please take care of me, your faithful servant. I said, well, not a bad prayer. I said, but it sounded like a petition. I said, do you ever do passive prayers? He said, passive prayer? I said, have you ever just prayed and not talked? He said, I don't understand what you mean. I said, instead of just praying, even though I know you weren't talking out loud when you prayed, but you're sending messages, why don't you receive? Why don't you just fold your hands, lower your head, and say, Dear Lord, I'm here, and be quiet 5 minutes. He said, I never thought of that. He said, you mean God will talk to me? I said, I'm not talking about this in any type of superficial way. I'm saying that you will receive something. He came back weeks later and he said, "That's remarkable." He said, "First of all, I was quiet for the first time in my life. Secondly, I sat still. Third, you were right." And he said, I didn't hear words in the sense of, "Hello down there." I heard something deeper than that. I sensed. And I think that is one of the most important things you can do, whether you run too hot or too cold, is to do with a special technique I call the technique, sit down and shut up. We today live in a society that values hostility, it values hurry, it values rush, it values number one. You can watch a television sporting event and the fans are sticking their fingers in the camera. We're number one, we're number one, we're number one. Number one's the best. Yet there's a certain irony here. When I ask my patients to name the team that won the World Series 3 years ago, number one, number one, they were unable to do so. Understand that number one is very, very fleeting. And I would like to share a very important rule. Goals are very important, but it does not always matter whether they're attained, because the pursuit of the goal itself is what really helps. When John Kennedy announced that we would be putting a man on the moon before the end of that decade, understand that whether we would have succeeded or not, suppose some terrible thing would have slowed it all down, we still would have learned an amazing amount over these years, whether or not we made it just on time and made that target date. To help our children, for they're our hope, to help our children learn that there's more than hurry, there's more than number one, there's more than just goals, we have to teach them a principle that I write about that some people get very upset about. And the principle goes this way: underachievement is very good for you. Now, you tell that to some teachers and they almost have a cardiac arrest right there in their chair. But my son came home from school one day and he had a report card and it was very, very good. It's all A's and a B. And I said, gee, on the B here, the teacher has a little note. And the note said, "Scott did well, but did not do as well as he could." I said, "Is that true, Scott?" Scott looked at me in my face and said, "Yep, that's true. I decided that in that particular class, I would not particularly do all that I could do. I enjoyed the reading of the books. I enjoyed having fun with the material. And I didn't really worry about the grade that much in that one. So that was my nice class to relax in." And my fatherly instinct was to say, "Well, you shouldn't have done that. You should have got that A. You were one grade away from all A's." And I thought, my gosh, he's right. He's absolutely right. So if anyone wants to do the biggest favor for their health, they can pick one area of their life right now where they decide, "I'm going to do less than I could do and enjoy it."
This is Scan. Dr. Paul Pearsall has studied the relationship between our immune system and our attitudes.
You come to feel as you behave. It is not what we have been taught. People think, "Well, I'll behave more happily when I feel happy." You behave happily and you will come to feel happy. And to convince my patients of that principle is very often an uphill battle. For example, right now, as you hear my voice, simply smile. Even if you don't want to, just smile hard. Crack it as hard as you can till your muscles ache. And they may ache because they're not getting too much of a workout lately. Even that little act changes your emotional status. What you've done is just given your brain a beautiful oxygen shower, and you're starting to feel a little differently. I didn't say all better. The problems didn't go away, but your behavior changed your emotions. One of the first recommendations we do is to say, go out and walk, move. What a person who is sad must do is keep moving. Moving targets are hard to hit, even by depression. So we say, move, get out. So when a patient calls me up and says, "It's not going to work for me, it's useless," I'll say, "Well, you know, you may be right, and maybe you can convince me, but I haven't got time to talk to you now. So all I ask you to do is to go out for a long walk first before we declare you totally depressed. Then you come back and we'll declare you depressed. I'm not arguing, but just you have to do that." Very often they'll say, "Well, I don't want to do that." "No, this is a medical assignment. You must do that." "Then, but well, I'm not saying this will help you. Just do it." almost always when they come back, they feel a little, and I underline a little better. I'm not suggesting that when we're very, very down, a simple little walk changes our whole life. But if we move, if we smile, if we make connection with others, we have made our first move toward dealing with that depression. But when we sit down and ruminate, understand, depression is addicting. It's addicting. Chemicals come with depression. And then when you get depressed, you actually get changes in brain chemistry. And you get used to those changes. And then you need more of those depressing chemicals to stay as sad as you are. So you start to get sadder and sadder. And another danger is the sadder you get, the more people don't want to deal with you. Because we don't want to be around you if you're sad. You frighten me. You remind me of my sadness. So we pull away. Then the sad person says, see, nobody wants to be around me. And I'm getting sadder. And the depression carousel goes round and round and round. The only way to get off that carousel is to say, wait a minute, maybe going in circles isn't the answer. Maybe I ever have to ask again, what is my life for? Where am I going? Am I connecting with other people? Am I taking responsibility for my lifestyle? Am I in trying to celebrate even this moment, even though I'm encountering terrible crises? Am I making any effort to be finding that healer within? Illness is healthy. Make no mistake about it. To be sick is one of the healthiest things you can ever do. Let me explain what I mean. Illness is a God-given attention getter. When you get sick, that means, hey, something is wrong with the system. I did not say something is wrong with you. Wherever there is gold, there are counterfeiters. There are people now talking about, well, if you've got cancer, you should have solved this. What have you done wrong? You should use imagery. You should think of sharks eating cells and destroy them so that you won't have cancer. You must have failed. This is patently incorrect. It is just not the case that we understand completely why people get ill. But we do know that just as night follows day, illness follows health. There is a grand, grand similarity between the hideousness of illness and the grandeur of health. We learn from crisis. We learn about our bodies from illness. So to sit down and blame at the very time when your immune system is compromised is the worst thing you could ever, ever do. So never, but never, never blame yourself when you're sick. Never say, what did I do wrong? Ask instead the question, okay, what can I learn from this? What can I do now to maximize my healer within? There was a woman in my hospital that came up and grabbed my lab jacket just before I started work on my next research project. And she said, Dr. Pearsall, we've read your books, and I'm sorry to say that I failed. I said, you failed? How could you fail? This is not a course. And she said, no, my husband just passed away. And we tried imagery, and we tried meditation, and we tried prayer, and he died. And I said, you do understand that death is a natural part of living. And I'm very sorry that he has died. And I pray along with you that it wasn't premature. But even if it was, we have to understand the principle of human beings that applies to parents and to children. We almost always are doing the best we can. I have never seen anybody who gets up in the morning and says, today I will proceed to do the worst job I will ever do in my life. I have trouble with parents sometimes with that. They'll say, I think my son does. I think my son has a commitment to driving me to an early grave. Well, that may be part of the tension we feel, but they do not intend it. They are doing their best. So celebrate at those times. Sometimes we have to accept illness as a natural part of our sequence. Have the chicken soup. Have a good cold. Understand those minor illnesses and even the major illnesses. Experience it for what it is. And the only goal is to maximize a healer within, not to conquer the beauty of God's natural system. If I could give any warning to people who are interested in this brand new discovery called psychoneuroimmunology, the connection between the mind and the brain, I would like to tell everyone that this is the most important discovery in the history of medicine. It opens up a new channel to the healer within that is amazing in its capacities. But we dare not forget what Mark Twain warned. God cures, the doctor sends the bill.
You've been listening to a remix version of SCAN, an electronic sweep of the horizon discovering God's activity in the world. We featured medical doctor Paul Pearsall, who's finding that health is more than medicine. SCAN is a production of Select Learning, a continuing education program of the Evangelical Lutheran Church in America.